What up, y'all? It's your favorite neighborhood podcast host on the dopest podcast on earth. Usually we throw in an outtake at the beginning of the show, but tonight Chris and I wanted to give an extra special thank you to our lovely Summer Sessions co-host who's been here all summer, ready to go on the drop of a dime. She's been a great co-host. I want to give a very special thank you to Katie. She's really did her homework. She came through. This is the last Summer Sessions episode, and we couldn't be more appreciative to have her on the team. So thank you so much, Katie. You've been not just a co-host on the dopest podcast on earth, but you've also been truly a great friend, one of my best friends, and I love you 3,000.
What's up? This is Chris. I just wanted to say thank you so much to Katie. These Summer Sessions have been amazing. We are both, I speak for Brad myself, but we're so grateful that you were able to help us out all summer long, be an amazing part of this team, and that you're going to keep on being a part of the team. So thank you so much for everything you do, and cheers to a great summer. That was a lot of fun. I cannot wait to get back into the mix of things and really get this all going. So here's to an awesome future, and Katie, thank you so much for being a part of it.
Summer Sessions in session, expect the unexpected. I'm talking to minutes to seconds, it's podcast perfection. Keep you guessing what methods I'm messing with the new section. And it's the dopest podcast on earth, best you rep. So, yeah, we on, tell me that we on. Yo, this is the dope show. Yeah, we on, tell me that we on. Yeah, this be the dope show. Yeah, we on, tell me that we on. Yo, this is the dope show. Yeah, we on. Tell me that we on. Yeah, this beat the dope show.
Dope show.
Play the ghost exclusive.
Allow me to demonstrate the skill of Shaolin, the special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah, yeah. What up? What up? What up?
What's up?
It's another super dope episode of the G-Splash Summer Sessions, a.k.a. that G6. Where we kick you six news stories of the week that you need to know about in pop culture. Go over it, spit you some stuff, and then we talk about it a little bit. And this is episode number 99 of the dopest podcast on earth. Riding along with me, as always, the lovely Katie is back again.
Hello, everybody.
Making her official 10th full-length feature podcast. How does it feel? Round of applause.
Roman numeral X. Awesome. It feels good. I mean, I'm sick, but the podcast feels good.
You digging it? This is the season finale of our Summer Sessions. Went by really quickly.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it's summer. October.
It's October, the best month of the year. Speaking of October, let's do some upcoming episodes and announcements. Next week, we're hitting Comic-Con hard. Episode 100. Big deal, big deal.
When is the first day of Comic-Con?
The first? Yeah, it's Thursday. Chris and I will be there. Excellent. Kicking it off. Represent the Dopest Podcast.
Are you guys going to be wearing G-Splash merch? You should.
There'll definitely be a few. At least the first day will go pretty hard. But also next week, we'll be kicking back off with our Splash Trash Meh episode. Mm-hmm. And you will be back for that, right, Katie? Or we'll be doing the Joker.
Oh, yeah, I'm seeing that on Sunday.
The hype. Is it real?
I guess the last 15 minutes, according to Boss Logic on IG, are the most intense 15 minutes of cinema he's ever seen.
That's bold.
I know.
Can't wait. We'll be talking all about it next week. But fuck it. Let's get into some news because there's some crazy stuff to happen this week. So let's get into it. Kanye West is teaming up with IMAX. And this is the interesting. But per an IMAX press release, the company will collaborate with West for a Jesus is King movie. The project was filmed during the summer 2019 and features all kinds of stuff from the Summer Service Group. Over the weekend, Kanye reportedly unveiled Jesus is King sneak peeks at Detroit's Fox Theater and Chicago's Roosevelt University. The album was supposed to come out, but it got pushed back. I think Kim Kardashian, didn't Kim Kardashian say something about the release date?
She had like done a sneak peek of the track list back in, I think, August, and then posted like an update that had another song on it.
Ah, so last minute additions that Kanye is notoriously known for.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants.
This is interesting, though, an IMAX movie. Like, I'm curious what he's got, his vision is for this and what it's going to be.
I think from what I read, it's documentary style of the making of the album. But then he traveled to this really amazing sculpture out in Arizona that's in the Rodin Crater, and then did footage there with the choir that he used on this album. So I think it'll probably be like a really expanded artistic music video slash documentary on making of the album.
He did that short film back in Dark Fantasy, which was pretty cool, I thought, anyway. But I don't know if IMAX cameras and shit is necessary for this, but
it's Kanye, of course.
Speaking of gigantic sized things, the Jurassic Park cast is the OG cast is coming back. And Jurassic World 3 set to drop on June 11th, 2021. And it will feature Laura Dern, Jeff Goldblum, and Sam Neill? Yeah, Neill.
Yeah.
Apparently the kids kind of want to get back in on it too, or make a cameo as well.
I mean, that scene in the car with the T-Rex is just one of the best action adventure movies. You know, it's up there with Indiana Jones grabbing the hat as the stone is coming down. So I would love to see what they could do with it. But I think it's always hard blending nostalgia with newness. Like, does this become like a cheesy remake, or can they keep this fresh and inventive while also reminding us of how much we loved the first film? But I hope that they're able to keep it new and exciting and not have it be, you know, really a cheesy remake, essentially. I hope that Ian Malcolm is wearing the leather pants again, though. That is one thing that must continue.
Well, he was in the last one.
Was it? I didn't see the last one.
He was in it for like 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see the last one, but I hope the leather pants are back, because that is a memory I'd like to revisit.
Well, speaking of parks, Catherine Powell is a Disney park veteran, has officially stepped down. She oversees the U.S. and Paris theme parks for the Walt Disney Company, and she's leaving the studio, as the Hollywood Reporter has reported. She's in her position when these recent openings for the two Star Wars lands, Galaxy's Edge, dropped at both Orlando and California, but it's falling flat so far, and attendance is way down from what their expectations were, and they've even had to put together like additional marketing discounts and other things like that. But the last few people I've talked to have gone, all said it wasn't crazy. The lines were fine. The Millennium Falcon ride isn't that long of a wait. So,
well, and right now they have one ride. That's it.
Right.
Which isn't a huge draw. And going to Disney is spendy. You know, going to a Star Wars film is, you know, $15, depending on where you are. Going to experience this is going to cost you thousands of dollars unless you live within a short drive of either of these parks. And so I think, and so much of what's happening at Galaxy's Edge costs extra, like to build a lightsaber is $200. To go to the cantina is incredibly expensive. And
milk,
so I think
the colored milk is like $8.
Right. Like, so I think that the, you know, the lineup of the overlap between finding Disney fans that are also avid Star Wars fans is a smaller margin than I think they maybe expected. Like, the average Disney fan maybe will pop in, but isn't a Star Wars fan. Everybody loves Star Wars because it's been really accessible to just go to the movies, go to Target, grab a t-shirt, get your kid a toy. But to make an investment like this, I don't know how many people who aren't already Disney fans, like if you're not a Disney fan but a Star Wars fan, are you going to spend that much money to just come here for one ride right now? I don't think so.
That's part of the problem is it's all centered around the last few films.
Right.
So it doesn't pay homage, or like there's nothing besides the Millennium Falcon and a few minor things. It doesn't.
There's no. Right.
There's no OG stuff. So
how fun would an Ewok village be? You know?
Yeah, like, I mean,
all of these other things. It's
they
just
could've lit. They should make the Swiss Family, well, it's not Swiss Family, it's Tarzan now, but they should change that little treehouse into a Star Wars thing.
Yeah, I think that there's things that they could do to make this more accessible, but I think right now, if you're just a Star Wars fan who isn't interested in seeing Disney, to go there for one ride, that's, you know, but I think as they add the Rise of the Resistance, and then when they have this immersive hotel experience, I think they'll maybe begin to see that people think that the investment of dollars for, you know, two rides, the hotel, all of that being a more worthwhile trip than to just go for one.
Speaking of Star Wars, though, Kevin Feige is officially going to produce a Star Wars film. It was announced this past week that he would be developing a new Star Wars movie after meeting with executives from Disney and Lucasfilm, Kathleen Kennedy. He is said to have always been a huge fan of the franchise, and The Hollywood Reporter has claimed that Feige has already been told one major actor that there's a specific role he would like them to appear in, leading fans on a speculation frenzy. As always, that's what Kevin Feige is known for. Make everybody talk about what and predict and all this stuff. A lot of stuff's been tossed at Brie Larson. She capitalized and made a post, but the biggest and funny one for me, or like fun one, was Chris Evans threw his name in that hat. So, which is kind of interesting because he was like, I'm going to leave the Marvel stuff and like try and regroup and retire slightly, but now he's open for Star Wars. But it's fine. So I'm okay with either war. I'm not mad at that decision. We talked a little bit about this off the pod right when the news broke, and I was like,
I hate it.
I was very upset, and we'll get into why later, but do you think Kevin Feige can save this franchise? What does that mean? And also, my other question for you would be, how does that make Kathleen Kennedy look, and or J.J. Abrams, who can't seem to nail a franchise?
I mean, I think also this idea that, you know, the franchise is failing. I mean, the last four films made $4.5 billion. Like, let's all just take a step back. The franchise is not...
Here's why. The problem is... failing. Is that every Star Wars film that they've shot, they've spent so much money doing reshoots, hiring directors.
Right. I mean, every single one has had... Well, Rogue One, Solo, and Rise of Skywalker have all had mid-production... directorial changes, bode well for a film necessarily.
And Solo had it. They fired those two guys, and then they went on to do Into the Spider-Verse, which was like the best movie, one of the best movies ever. Of 2017 or whatever. Yeah. So I think that's the problem. I think Disney's willing to throw down the money, but it's the turnaround or like the profit margin's not very lucrative. I mean,
I think what Kevin Feige can do, and the only reason why I would feel any opposition is because I don't want Marvel to suffer in any way, shape, or form with his attention being somewhere else.
Right.
But Kevin Feige has been able to make forward-thinking, decisive decisions that have both pleased, you know, canon fans and brought in new fans. And that's exactly what Star Wars needs right now. Star Wars old fans need to be happy with the product, but also new fans need to come in and be moved forward with this. So I think that it makes sense. I kind of had an idea that now that Marvel, Disney, Star Wars are all under one umbrella, that a move like this was maybe going to be moving, you know, and now with the Skywalker saga ending, they've got a whole new thing, a whole new universe opening up. So I think if anybody can do it, it's Kevin Feige.
Yeah, that's just the problem I think with that it is an issue is you have Rian Johnson, who's supposed to do his own trilogy. You have those dudes who ran the last season of Game of Thrones in the dirt to do their Star Wars trilogy. So it's kind of weird to me that they... Like, what does that mean for those other two guys? And again, with my thing with Kathleen Kennedy, it's kind of like she's not doing a good job. I mean, the land is, the park is not doing well. The movies are getting a lot of backlash. You know, most people will probably step down or get fired, but somehow they're going to rely on Kevin Feige to save it. Which, if he does, I think he'll go down as the biggest, most successful, and the best Hollywood producer of all time, exceeding Spielberg, absolutely, James Cameron, and George Lucas, all of them.
Yeah, so, I hope he does it for the, you know. And I also think Kevin Feige, you know, if Weiss and Benioff from Game of Thrones, you know, he can look at them and be like, your last season was trash. You know, I've produced 4 of the highest grossing films of all time. You all can, you know, right. Like, I think if anybody can come in and make people listen to him about what's going to be done, it's him.
Right. But like you said, if it makes Marvel stuff suffer, then it's going to be a huge gamble on his part that didn't pay off.
I think he can do it. I believe in him.
Like I said before, we talked off the pod, and at first when this news broke, I was like really mad because I said, yo, if this is why we're not getting Spider-Man in the MCU, so Kevin Feige could do Star Wars, like, it's not worth it for me. I don't, blah, blah, blah. I went on a little rant to both you and Chris. But the next day, Spider-Man was back in the MCU.
Back in baby's arms. There you belong.
Yes. Yes.
Yep.
That being said, in the peace accords read around the world, Disney and Sony came to a brokered peace concerning the use of Spider-Man in the MCU. Disney will now pay up 25% of the budget for the third Spider-Man movie in exchange for 25% of the profits. Kevin Feige will then serve as a producer along with Amy Pascal for the next sequel. There will be he will also appear in at least one more other MCU movie, which will be whatever the team, if it's going to be Avengers or whatever the next storyline is. It's got a scheduled release date of July 16th, 2021, which now makes it the 4th film in that 2021 slate lineup. Which has never been done, has never been done by Marvel before. So not only that, but we're getting hella TV shows. So now my question, with that being said, we're all happy. There's a couple of things we'll talk about too about Spider-Man, but this comes back to the age-old question of the last 10 years. Superhero fatigue. Is this too much?
No.
I wouldn't say it's too much. I'm going to be all over it. Yeah, I would agree.
You are asking the wrong person. It is not enough. I want a monthly Marvel movie. Like, you know, there's never enough. I would say that for me, but I also know that, like, I'm saying that from the type of personality that it's never enough. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's something for people to be thoughtful of. I think that Spider-Man also having Sony in that takes some of that pressure off because they do have another company that can take some of that load.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Shang-Chi, Doctor Strange, Spider-Man 3, Thor. I mean, that's a big year. It's exciting.
Yeah, it's gonna be a major one, dude. But also, after this news came out about Spider-Man, like, I know everyone's been excited about it, but it has come out that they are going to, and Kevin Feige is going to write Spider-Man out of the MCU.
What?
Yeah, so he can go back to Sony. He also still, he may or may not make an appearance in Venom 2. Don't know what that's looking like. But yeah, apparently they're going to write him out of the MCU. I think that's a better solution if we have to get rid of him at all versus the cliffhanger we had.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't like it now.
No, I don't like it either, but, you know, things change and develop. And I think with him being in the MCU and having that, I'm sure when they write him out, a new contract will be set that will allow certain things to be brought with, not maybe as actively, but things that can be mentioned or things that can be explained in whatever Spider-Man 4 will be, so that there's a transition of storyline versus what it would have been had he stayed out of the MCU now, which was, okay, like all these loose ends that won't get tied up if they can't broker a deal.
Right. It will be very interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, there's a lot of time left to really wait for it. But in that note, like, I'm just happy that he's back in the MCU.
I was crying.
Yeah, you said that. That's right. You did say that. I forgot.
Right. And you were like, why? What happened? And I was like, no, he's back. I had like all these tears in my eyes. And like, that's weird. Cause like 6 months ago, I was like, Spider-Man is not my friend.
Oh, no. Yeah. I also forgot about that. You were like, Spider-Man's
whatever. I don't care.
Maybe not.
Am
like,
I Rosie
voice,
Perez? What was that? I wasn't a fan of Spider-Man, and now I was like, oh, Spider-Man has my heart. I love this version. The Tobey Maguire one was not, but this Tom Holland one, oh, gets me in the feels. I love it.
Yeah, somebody asked me recently about what I thought about Spider-Man and if I thought it was too much, and I could have deep dive nerded out, but I was like, they don't care. But speaking of nerding out sequels and shifting cinematic universe, if you will, we got a new Birds of Prey trailer. Warner Brothers dropped the official trailer for Birds of Prey, starring Margot Robbie. The upcoming Harley Quinn spinoff, based on the DC comic of the same name, and is the eighth film in the DC extended universe. Man, DC's got some stuff going on, but this trailer looks really cool. I'm digging the hyenas. Seems like it's still tied to Suicide Squad in a weird way. I don't know how they're going to pull this off. But you haven't seen like all the DC stuff, right? Or have you?
I didn't finish the movie Suicide Squad because I thought it was so
dumb.
Yeah, I was like, ugh, I didn't even finish it. And that's rare. Like So I'm going to have to rewatch that in order to prepare for this, because I'm here for this trailer and whatever this film is going to be. Between the amazing costuming that I saw, the fact that they're going to be doing some sort of take on Marilyn Monroe's iconic Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend performance, that it's all like a female-led cast, Ewan McGregor's the bad guy, like I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm
a little worried about it, but I think I don't know. The whole DC's just had a rough they just had a rough track record, and every time they drop something, it looks great. But it doesn't.
Are you worried about it because of how bad Suicide Squad was, or are you worried about it in and of itself?
I'm worried about it. I actually kind of liked Suicide Squad. I thought it was all right, but with the movie The Joker that's supposed to stand on its own, but then Robert Pattinson said it's not. I mean, like Drew, he said something in some interview, and he was like, "Yo, you can't put that in the thing." And they're like, "Yeah, fuck you, we're gonna put it in the thing." And so it kind of led that like it is part of the same. Like it's just really confusing right now. And
like where this lines up with the rest of the DC extended universe.
Yeah, it's just a mess right now, and especially with Wonder Woman coming out. Is that coming out? That comes out next year, right?
2022.
They pushed back Wonder Woman that far back?
Yeah. The article that I read today that was discussing what the WB's upcoming lineup is has it at 2022 for Wonder Woman 2 and the Aquaman sequel.
No, Wonder Woman comes out June 5th, 2020.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, then
Forbes. Birds of Prey comes out February 7th. Either way, there's two female-led movies coming out for DC, which I think is dope. In 2020, you got Margot Robbie and Birds of Prey, as well as Wonder Woman with Gal Gadot and Patty Jenkins on the directing tip. It'll be great, I think. I think hopefully they can get their shit together over there. Speaking of dope team-ups and a big, big family, let's get into this Wu-Tang!
Wu-Tang again.
Again and again.
Today we're talking all about Wu-Tang, American Saga, which is on Hulu, and it is way better than I thought it would be. Currently, it's got a 75% critic score with an 84% audience score, and the show basically tracks the Wu-Tang Clan's formation, a vision of Bobby Diggs, a.k.a. the RZA, who strives to unite
a
dozen, he's got like 19 names. They all do. He strives to unite a dozen young black men that are torn between music and crime, but eventually rise to become the unlikeliest of American success stories. Man, I love this show. I know it's dramatized a lot because it's a...
But is it?
It's because it is, actually. I think that's because they're trying to cram a lot into the 10 episodes.
I mean,
so,
I think what happened actually happened. I think it didn't happen. You know, there was more time between
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. So I was like, no, yeah. Like I've learned now that this is a very clear representation of how this group was formed and what was going on in Gatton Statton in the early 90s.
My thing so far is I feel like it's supposed to, is this 14? How many episodes is it? 10 or 14? It's 10. And right now we're on tomorrow, like tonight when this hit, when this podcast is live in a full effect for everyone to listen to, it is and will be Wu-Tang Wednesday, so a new episode will appear tonight.
Episode seven.
I'm curious, do you think they're going to make this in a couple different seasons? I mean, they can, because I feel like right now it's like 1991, 1990 maybe, and 36 Chambers didn't come out until 93.
I feel like
they don't really tell
more...
you the timeline.
Yeah, they don't tell you the timeline. I agree with that.
The only way I was able to see the timeline was in that when they talked about Fallujah or the Gulf War.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said Fallujah. It was the Gulf War, which I believe took place in 1991. And they were talking about that be going to be a thing. Yeah. So that's really the only time frame. But with it being the seventh episode and so much going on, they haven't really come together yet. And this is a spoiler, I guess. And as far as I know, it doesn't seem like they're slowly getting there, but not to the point where you think episode 10 is going to be the release of Into the 36 Chambers.
I mean, I think what occurred in this last episode, I think is going to be hopefully a wake-up call to the group that this life of on the streets and crime and all of those things, that they need to make a change and focus more on the music. They're not a group yet, but they're interpersonal fightings.
I did know the thing that did happen, which I knew about RZA already, was in the last episode, episode six, you see his mom, I guess his stepdad or her boyfriend or whatever, getting ready to pack up and move to Ohio. And RZA actually stays back. He makes a bunch of sacrifices to stay and put Wu-Tang together.
Yep. So glad he did. Thank
you. On that note, we've talked a little bit about it, but I got to know, Katie, is this a splash, trash, or meh?
It's a total splash. And I will say that I wasn't... It's a slow build, though, people.
It is.
You know, it takes a couple episodes before it really grabs you. And you're like, oh my gosh, I want to see what happens next. I will also say that if I had had a better idea of... Because I've watched it now through twice.
Oh, nice.
I didn't know, aside from being able to determine, you know, that Bobby was the RZA and that Shotgun was Method Man, I had no idea who was becoming I couldn't get it figured out. And so I would say, if you aren't somebody who knows the backstory of the Wu-Tang, that doing a little bit of research to know who's who will help you clarify these storylines. And also to know that this is truly a biopic, not an interpretation, not a dramatization. This is what happened to form this group.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I'm notorious for hating on biopic movies. There is one that's good.
Wow.
Except for like NWA, Straight Outta Compton, that movie was great. This one, I understand that this kind of makes me a hypocrite. I don't know. Because I didn't like Bohemian Rhapsody and how they like fudged over a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I feel like a lot of that stuff they fudged over was important.
Yeah, I thought Bohemian Rhapsody was not an accurate portrayal of Freddie Mercury's life.
Right. I feel like this one is definitely Hollywood, but is more of the time frame getting crammed together in that sense. And then shooting it very dramatic and cinematic to the point where like cliffhangers are there.
Oh, yeah.
You're invested in the characters. But I will agree with you. I think this shit is a straight up splash. And also,
that's the first time we've agreed in a while.
In a while, I know, right? And I would also agree that it does kind of take you a moment to figure out who is who. I recognized RZA, obviously, right away. And then Raekwon, I recognized pretty early, who's played by Shameik Moore.
If anybody needs my notes with my diagrams and all of that, feel free to hit me up, because I have it all lined up now. But yeah, I was not clear on who was who.
For the most part, everyone's kind of signed off on this series, except for three people. And I want to say that one of them is Raekwon. Ghostface at first was the hardest one for me to peg, that he was Ghostface, because they called him Dennis. And I was like, who the fuck is Dennis?
Dennis Coles is the ghost face's actual name.
Yeah, so so here's who's executive producing it is RZA, Method Man, Ghostface is, Inspector Deck, Master Killer, and GZA, as well as The Estate for Old Dirty Bastard. So the rest of them are not involved and have stayed away from commenting on such. Now, I know from the drama way back when, I know that Raekwon was like the last one to come around, and he was very envious of Method Man, who's or Shotgun in the show, who's played by
Dave East,
and he's killing it. Like, he sounds just like Method Man. They put out a song
like him.
The fifth episode where it's Dave East rapping, but he sounds just like Method Man. It's crazy how good he's doing. And Method Man actually handpicked him to play him. So
yeah, him in that Hoyas jersey was like, oh, that's so Method Man. That's exactly who, you know, I think he's doing an excellent, excellent job.
Yeah, he's got his demeanor and his charisma down. It's uncanny.
Rapping, the big personality, all of it. I think he's a standout.
Other thing that I've noticed too is like, you almost, from the first episode to the last episode, you can kind of see some of these guys evolve and grow. But for some reason, Meth had always seemed to be responsible. I know he's from Staten Island, but I think he was kind of, now, I don't want to say privileged or anything like that, but he was on the better side of the tracks.
Yeah, but he had his parents had split up. And so he spent half of his time on Long Island and half of his time in Park Hill. So I think he had a little bit more of a balance of experience than the rest of the
But he did, yeah. And he hung out with all them dudes, and they're all connected by mutual friends and different people in the community.
Well, and being related, I think RZA, GZA, and, oh man, ODB are all cousins.
I believe that's true. I don't know 100%, but sounds good to me. also, Inspector Deck is played by Joey Badass, which was something I didn't see coming right away. The cast on this show is making it such a good show. Whoever's directing it is also doing a really good job. All in all, man, this is a great Hulu show. So everybody should be very pleased. I know a lot of people hate biopic stuff. I am one of those people.
I'm not.
Not so sure if it's because it's rap related that it works for me.
Yes.
But if I didn't know that this was a biopic show,
I'd still watch it. Yeah.
This show would be great without knowing having been tied to Wu-Tang.
Well, I think too, they also have a really great ability. Sometimes I think biopics don't come off very authentically. And this is, not only is there great acting, but they've done a great, I mean, the costuming on this, you know, they've got like vintage leather Avericks jackets and like a Hoyas jersey and like vintage polo. And like, it just, everything that they're doing makes it seem exactly like we're getting like real footage of what it was like in the early 90s forming this group. Like, we're getting like a bird's eye view of it all.
Even the yellow tapes that RZA's like, yo, don't sell these to anybody. Hold them for me. Don't sell them to anybody else. And that's an iconic yellow colorway known for Wu-Tang. But man.
Right. The SB1200 being the premier machine at that time, like keeping that authentic and showing, because that was the machine that, you know, everybody was using then because there wasn't the time lag on it. But I feel like they've just really kept these, like those details, like the yellow, the machinery that, like, whenever RZA's making beats, he has a bandana, like all of these little things that they've done. There hasn't been, and I'm not by any means like a Wu-Tang historian, but I'm very familiar with them as a group and their music, that there aren't things that right now that I'm like, that's not how that looked, or that's not what that video was like, or that's not how it went.
Circles back to my next question. With there being four episodes left, are we going to get another season, or are we going to get an ending to this in this first run?
God, I want another season. I'd love to. But I'd also think I think that it would maybe be like a really awesome one season show if like the last episode is them releasing 36 Chambers to the world. And then the rest is history. Then we really know what happened with the group. But a lot of this is not, you know, well-known information. So I think this could be an awesome one season series that is just the formation leading up to, you know, this iconic album, but I'd like to see another one.
You think they can cram all that in four episodes?
I think that they, I mean, I think that they could. I think that if what happened in this last episode is a catalyst for everybody getting focused and reprioritized, I think they easily could be doing that. Because I know it was somewhere in this timeline was when RZA approached Meth and was like, give me a year. Like, give me 1 year to focus on this music. I mean, I guess that'd be a year, though, in four. I don't know. I'd like another series. Hulu executives, RZA, Brian Grazer, if you're listening to this, please give us another season. Thank you.
See, where I think it'd be really dope is if at the end of this season, they finally come together, RZA starts getting them on the same page, and then they start 36 Chambers. And the way to end it is like they start writing it, putting it together. So the next season, you start off with it's done, or you can do the next season where they're making this record, which could also be cool.
Right.
But you could do like the Entourage formula where like Vince goes off to make the movie, and then the next season comes around, he's already made it, the movie's premiering. Do that kind of jump.
And how they start grappling with.
And then you could do, you could do like the next season about like how they start to fall apart, how they kind of start drifting apart. Tons of drama in that. People want to see that. And then even like the third season.
Enter the
Wu-Tang.
You could
even do like.
Or Wu-Tang Forever.
Yeah, you could do that. Or you can bring it all the way up to like how they finally got back together and blah, blah, blah. Right off in the sunset. There's so much stuff in there.
Well, and I would like to see
a lot of jelly in those donuts.
Yeah, well, there's so much happening, and this is my favorite era of hip hop, is like early to mid 90s East Coast New York rap.
The thing that I do love about the decision they made is not to make this a movie, but make it a show.
I want all the details. I want to see the whole thing. So I'm glad it's a show.
Well, we both called it a splash. Let's wrap this up real quick. I'm going to ask you who's your favorite Wu-Tang member and what is your favorite Wu-Tang song? It's a tough one.
Oh, God. I should have thought about this. I think my favorite Wu-Tang member is the Method Man. Maybe Killa Bees? Ugh. Don't quote me. I don't.
Killa Bees, you mean? Or do you mean Triumph?
Yeah, Triumph. Yeah. Triumph. Triumph.
It's a tough one. It's a tough one to lock down.
I was listening to 36 Chambers today, and I was like, oh my gosh, yes.
So much good stuff.
Plus, I miss like the rap era of like the interludes and the intro outros. Like, we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I fucking lay your nuts on a fucking dresser. Just your nuts laying on a fucking dresser and bang them shits with a spike fucking bat.
I'll fucking pull your fucking tongue out your fucking mouth and stab the shit with a rusty screwdriver.
I could do without that one, but I did love the skits that were a part of things. Okay, who's your favorite, and what's your favorite song?
My favorite members, it's tough. I really like GZA. I do love Meth, so I would say my favorite song is definitely Shadowboxing.
Really?
Yeah, I do love that song. I know it's just GZA and Method Man, but Cream's also a good one.
Yeah,
it's tough.
I mean, I quote that one the most. I would say, but bangers. Yeah, I think it's Triumph because Wu-Tang Forever was my first introduction to the Wu-Tang. I started hanging out with a group of vagabond miscreant dudes when that album came out. Vagabond. And so that's how I was really introduced to KRS-One. I mean, God, I have so many, like, this has been so nostalgic for me to watch this. But yeah, I think... Yeah, Triumph, I think, was my first. Wu-Tang Forever was the first album I bought. I still have the CDs. And I think Triumph was the first song I knew all the words to.
Wu-Tang Forever is actually the first CD that I stole from. And I stole it from Blockbuster Video.
Brad.
Criminal.
Yeah, this group of dudes really, my parents hated it. They were terrified for me.
You can catch Wu-Tang, An American Saga on Hulu every Wednesday, of course. Hashtag
at midnight.
Wu-Tang Wednesdays. It's a dope show, just like this is the dope show. Check it out. Let us know what your thoughts are. Are you enjoying the show? Do you hate the show? Is it a show you love? Tell us your favorite Wu-Tang memory, your favorite Wu-Tang song, member, There's so much to talk about with the Wu and the skills from Shaolin. That's going to do it for this episode. And before we go, I want to say give an extra special round of applause and thank you to the lovely Katie for joining us this summer on Summer Sessions. You've been phenomenal. So thank you. Congratulations on your 10th episode.
Hopefully, invoice for my payment is in the mail.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's why I asked for the address. You've been great on the show, and everybody's seemed to really enjoy you on the show, much like both Chris and I have. You've been great. So thank you very, very much. And this won't be the last episode. That's going to do it. Next week, we're going 100, baby. So be juiced and ready for that. We'll be talking fireworks, popping champagne for the smallest milestone ever. But it's going to be big for us.
Small milestone was huge. Yeah. Major.
We're happy about it. So we'll see you next week. We'll talk Joker, Comic-Con. We out of here, baby. Peace.
Bye.